Okay, so this is the UVic Military Oral History Program interview with Ron Cavan, recorded on March 23rd at Victoria, BC, interviewed by Kimberly Dunn. So, Mr. Ron Cavan, do I have your permission to record this interview?
Yes.
So, can I get you to state your name, providing both your given name and surname?
Okay, Ronald Barry Cavan.
All right.
Okay, we're being recorded then, obviously, right? Okay,
so. Yeah. So we can start. Okay. So when were you born?
11th of July, 1948.
All right. And where were you born?
Toronto, Ontario.
Okay. So do you want to tell me more about your family?
Yes, I came from a family of 11. Okay. As me being the oldest. Okay. I have myself. And I had 7 sisters and 2 brothers. So, there we are. 7, 8, 9, 10. There's one more. Oh, one died. There you go.
What date did you join the Army?
I joined the Army on my birthday in 1966.
So was family a contributing factor to that or anything?
Yeah. I wanted to get out of there. Okay. I wanted to get out of Toronto. Because, like it says here, why did you join? If I had stayed where I was in Toronto, I was going to get in trouble. I was going that route. And a friend of mine joined the Army a few years earlier, and when he came home after his training, his basic training, that's where I got the idea to join.
All right.
If I had stayed in Toronto, I would have gotten in trouble.
You would have been in jail.
Yeah, exactly. So.
Okay, so where are some of the places that you served?
Okay, are you talking about just about Cyprus itself?
Or anywhere.
Oh, okay. I started off in Calgary, okay, from Toronto to Calgary. Finished my basic training, okay, in Calgary. Went right to Cyprus at 19 years old. Okay, come back from there and got posted to Victoria. I was in Victoria for a very, very long time. Went to Wainwright and did 4 years there in Wainwright, Alberta, and then got posted back to Victoria again, which I never thought would ever happen, but it did. So I was very lucky in that side of it, because I love Victoria. You know, it's just a great place to be. Other places I've been are like for exercises, like Norway and the US and Germany, like all over the country, all over Canada for training wise. Most of my advanced courses were done in the East Coast in Gagetown. Okay, Gagetown, New Brunswick. That's where I did all my, I guess, the big courses or career courses. That's the easiest way to say it. Okay, they were career courses. So.
Okay, so for a previous background before Cyprus, did you have a specific position? Were you in armored infantry?
I was infantry.
Infantry?
Yeah, I joined in infantry. I joined in the Queen's Own Rifles of Canada in 66. They were just disbanded in 1969 in Work Point Barracks. We basically had a big parade. We marched on as Queen's Own Rifles. We did a little parade. We marched off. We changed our head badges to PPCLI and marched back on again. And now we became PPCLI, Princess Patricia's Canadian Light Infantry. So. Mm-hmm.
So how did the military prepare you for your deployment to Cyprus? Were you given any heads up that you were going to deploy?
Yeah, we do. Cyprus is 6 months long. So 6 months prior to Cyprus, you do workup training, which specifically is designed for when you get to Cyprus for your job. Now, each time I went to Cyprus, I had a different job. Okay, the first time I went to Cyprus as a young rifleman, I was on an outpost, I was on several outposts for 6 weeks at a time. Then we would come back into camp, into one of the 3 camps that were in Cyprus, and there we would do a week of general duties, like washing pots and stuff like that. In those days you did that kind of stuff. And then we do like clean up around the camp, and then we basically have a week off, where we could do whatever we want. We go into town, go to, you know, all that good stuff. Do a little touring and that. And then we were sent back to another outpost. And we stayed together as a group, like a section. because you train together before you go, and when you get there, you try to stay with that same group. So you all work together. So it just works better that way.
Did you receive any specialized training then, if as a rifleman or?
Not really. We did some exercises in the camp where we were put in sentry boxes, which is what we were in Cyprus. And then we would check people coming in and out of the gates and things like that to make sure that, you know, they weren't bringing stuff in they weren't supposed to and so on down the line.
So yeah. Did they explain the situation in Cyprus to you?
Yep.
They told you, which years exactly did you serve? Because I know you did a few tours.
Yeah, I did 4 tours. 67 was a summer one. Okay, that was my first one after my basic training. And 70, 71, that's winter. In other words, it takes you over Christmas. 75, 76 is a winter one, and then 80 and 81 was also a winter. And there's six. This one was almost 7 months, the first one I was there. It was just the way things worked out, you know. Because you have to train the next unit coming in. Okay, you have to brief them, and that usually takes about a week long. So, like, the first one, we were placed by the Black Watch of Canada. Okay, so they came and joined us at our outpost. And then we would explain the duties and responsibilities there. So,
right. So their explanation was adequate.
Oh yes. It was very good for what we were to do there, and what our jobs were. And remember, I was a young private, so people told me what to do. You know, I was the lowest of the lowest. You know, so.
So, what were your initial thoughts on Cyprus when you arrived?
I was 17 years old, or 19 years old. I mean, it was great. I was in a foreign country, you know, hot. Oh my God, it was hot. I remember that, just walking off the plane the first time, and it, you know, 34 degrees forever, all summer long. So, very, very, very hot. So, our food was our food. Cooked by our own cook, so we didn't have to eat local. We bought local, but we cooked our own stuff. So
did you get any greetings from the locals?
Yeah, there was greetings on both sides, both Greek and Turk. We were mostly on all of the tours that I want. We were on the Greek side. There's two sides to this thing. I always thought pictures are worth 1,000 words, sort of thing. When you're on an outpost, there's this line. This is the city, this is the city. This is Turk, this is Greek. And you were on the line as the UN guy. The Turk guy was right there, and the Greek guy was right there. And in some instances, you were from here to across the street. In other instances, like in the mountains, when we were in the mountains, we might be miles apart. Their outpost might be way up here, and our outpost might be way over here. It all depends. If you're in the city, you're right close. You could say hi to them every morning, both sides. You can't have favoritism, right? You got to say hi to both of them. So. But we were mostly on the Greek. We bought all of our stuff from the Greek. All of our... is that a bottle person?
Yeah.
Oh!
I just gave Kagero some bags.
Did you give him some?
Yeah.
Oh, good, good. I collect bottles. I like doing it for the kids. And I have a program for the Legion. So, okay, so... And this was called the Green Line. Mm-hmm. Which was our line. We traveled it. We patrolled it. They didn't cross over here. They didn't cross over here unless we escorted them. That was basically our job.
And how was patrolling the Green Line? Did you run into any difficulties?
On occasions. Yeah, we had occasions. They, at night, mostly at night, would try to creep closer. This outpost, you know, say one day was there, and the next morning, it might be 100 feet this way. You know? And we, no, you got to go back where you were. And major incidents, what we usually did, or what I remember as a young kid, we would show a show of force. We always had backup people that were behind us in case there was a major incident. then we would bring them all to this spot. And we would just show them, this is what's going to happen to you if you don't leave or go back to where you were. That's basically how it worked, sort of thing. I would say that the first one that I went to as a young rifleman was the most interesting one, because I was really involved with this. The other tours I did there, I did other jobs because I moved up in ranks, so I got, you know, other kinds of jobs. So.
All right, so
am I explaining this right to you?
Yes.
Okay. Are you getting what you want? That's I got to make sure of that.
So we can talk about your different experiences. So your first tour, you were a rifleman.
Yeah.
And then your second tour, what did your job change?
I was a pioneer in what's called the Pioneer Platoon, and what they are is they're engineers for the infantry. They fix things. Okay, in the field. On exercises, we would build bridges, we would blow up bridges, we would do mine warfare and stuff like that. In Cyprus, what we became is like I was an electrician for one of the tours. So I did 2 weeks of training here at Dockyard with an electrician, and he gave me the basic outline of how to do things. When I get over here, all different. So, like, we would make a lighting for the OPs, for the outposts. We would make lighting for the guys in their little rooms that everybody created their own little space, you know, stuff like that. And we would just generally fix things, well, electrical. And we had, in that platoon, we had electricians, we had plumbers, and we had carpenters, we had sign painters, which is another thing that I used to do. Because when you get bored, you know, you got to keep busy, sort of thing. Because in places like Cyprus, you're always, the signs are everywhere. It's just like walking into a government office, you know, follow the yellow line, sort of thing. Same idea. Signs everywhere. So, let's see. The first one, rifleman. Second one, electrician. Third one, I was the platoon warrant or platoon sergeant of the Pioneer Platoon. So I was just like in charge of everything, everybody. I was one of them in the chain. You know, there was people above me, sort of thing. And then my last one, I was the transport. I ran all the transport for a Pacific company. Like you have in Cyprus, you have A company, B company, and C company. Each one of those companies were at a different location around Nicosia, Cyprus. And then you had what's called the support company. Okay, and that's where the Pioneer Platoon was in. And in there was the administrative people, the Pioneer Platoon guys, the transport and stuff like that. And in the company that I was in, we had a number of vehicles that we had to take care of, and each day those vehicles were assigned to go here, all over the place. And that was my job there for that. So, what else?
So,
how am I doing?
You're doing great. Okay. You're doing great.
I have some pictures too, if you like, pictures always help for things.
So, with your relations with the locals, you said that you stayed with the Greeks more, so were your relations better with the Greeks then?
Yes. I'll say that straight out. Yes, they were.
And then, how were your relations with the Turkish Cypriots?
They were a lot more, how do I explain it? They were a lot more serious about what, you know, the what was going on there. You know, they were a lot rougher. Dealing with the Greeks was easy to do. You sat down with them and you explained the situation and they understood it. The Turks would drag it on and drag it on and drag it on for a long time. And the outcome would always be the same. We win. That was our object, you know. Nobody can cross these lines. This is our job, and you're not going to do it, sort of thing. And the Greeks were fine. And maybe I say that because we were on the Greek side and we dealt with them every day. Like we had, when I was an electrician, for an example, I had a guy with me that was a Greek. I didn't have a Turk with me. I had a Greek guy with me because we were on the Greek side. So I got to know them better. So...
How did you deal with the language divide? Did you get a translator, or did
no? I learned as much as I could. It was one of my objects when I went there the first time. I always found it easier if you could say hi, thank you, good morning, good afternoon. They would treat you a little better, especially if you're downtown shopping, you know. You always, like the first time we were there, everywhere we went, if we went to the local store, we had a rifle with us, you know, and our blue beret and uniform and so on down the line. And if you could go in a shop and say good morning to them, you get a better price, I guarantee you. Or you could say thank you at the end, you know, sort of thing. So I even found that here at the local Greek a pizza place that I used to go to all the time. You know, I could say good evening to him, I could say thank you, and he was shocked. So so we became good friends.
With your use of the language, did it help if you went on a vacation on your spare time?
Yeah, it helped. And the same thing I just mentioned, you know, being able to say the basic things to them, it's a big difference.
So we've been over this a little bit, but what did you feel was your most important duty in any of your tours or a specific tour?
The first one was my most interesting and hardest.
Rifleman?
Yeah, that was the hardest one. You know, I was a young kid. You know, I have all these other people around me sort of thing. And I had a specific job to do, and you're up there in an outpost from 12 to 6 at night, you know, all by yourself sort of thing. So
So we also talked about this a little bit, but how did you try and prevent violence between the Greeks and the Turks? Did you experience any of that?
I only had one major incident that I was involved with. We were in Templos. It's called Templos Outpost. And up here was a place called St. Hilarion's Castle. Actually, it's where they made the very first Snow White, the movie. No, the very first one is where they made it. But anyway, we were down below them. And the Greeks were down in a valley down here. And there was this road that went up. They used to drop 45-gallon drums of water over the mountain. And then when they hit the ground, they sounded like an explosion going off, because they would burst open. They fired a few rounds into the village on this particular incident. Never hit anybody or anything. I don't think their intention was to hit anybody. They were just creating an incident. So there was about 6-7 miles from the main camp to this outpost. The commander at the time decided to do what I was mentioning earlier, a show of force. So he brought everything that we had, APCs, which are armored personnel carriers. We had jeeps with 50 caliber machine guns on it, mortars and everything. He brought everything here on this furnace and told them, if they don't stop doing this, we're going to fire back. It's very, very hard for us to fire back. Somebody basically has to be hurt, shot by one of the two sides before we can protect ourselves. That was our mandate. We were not allowed to do that sort of thing. Did I answer that question right? Mm-hmm. Did I do? Okay.
So then what were some of the rules of engagement then?
Just what I basically just mentioned. Somebody has to be physically hurt by one of the two sides before we could start protecting ourselves. That was our rules.
All right. And so did you feel like the mandate for Cyprus was successful to prevent violence between each side?
We did our job. Yeah, we did our job. No. I don't know if you know what's going on in the world right now with Cyprus. Like, they're falling apart. Okay. The euro is being flooded into Cyprus. If they accept it, they're going to get a whole bunch of money. If they don't. While we were there, we created an awful lot of money for the economy there. There was a lot of people there. I mean, in one of these camps, there was 200 guys. 200 here, 200 here, and probably 150 in this one, sort of thing. Not counting all the other countries that were there. Remember, we only controlled, Canada only controlled one part of Cyprus. This green line went from one end of the island to the other. You know, I don't know.
There's a picture. Is this the one, though?
No, I thought I had one with a picture on it of the island itself. So we just had one section of the island to take care of. The capital city, Nicosia, and then the surrounding area. Then over here were like the Finns, and over here were the Swedish, and over here were the English, you know, so everybody had their own little area to cover. So,
did you interact much with the other contingents, the Finns?
Yes, we always did an exchange program with one of the organizations. Like I went and spent a month with the English. And they sent matter of fact, there was a whole platoon of us went. They sent the platoon our way, the little exchange program. So we ate out of their mess halls and we did their duties and responsibilities like patrolling, outpost duties and stuff like that.
And you did that with each tour you exchanged?
No, I only did it on the first tour.
Only
on the first tour, yeah. Once you get up higher in rank, you don't do that kind of stuff. You know, not very often. Like I said, I had a Pacific job, electrician, sign painter, transport guy, you know, sort of thing.
With each tour, did you find that the political climate changed at all?
No, it only changed after 74. Mm-hmm. Okay, in 74, of course, the Greeks lost 99% of the island. I think it was 96% of the island. And the Turks took it over. So they invaded in 74. I wasn't there, unfortunately, but just, you know, because, you know, that's what you wanted to do. So, yeah, so the Turks now owned all of 90% of the island, and the Greeks were into little pockets all over the place, sort of thing. I have a story about that particular, if you want it.
Yeah.
Okay. On my second tour, I told you I was an electrician and I had an electrician working for me. He invited me to dinner once with his family. So this family took to me and I took to them, and for every other tour after that, I seen them. We corresponded letter writing over the years in between going, and we kept in contact with each other. In 74, of course, he was kicked out of his village and he lost everything. I mean, we were doing letter writing and he was telling me about what happened and all this good stuff. And then I lost contact with him altogether. Everything stopped. And I don't know why. I was getting nothing back. And then I went to Cyprus. And then I got the story about his village was overrun because it was right close to the coast. So he was one of the very first places to go. So when he left, he went to a refugee camp in the mountains. It took me almost a month and a half to track him down and find out where he was. And I drove up there one day and I started asking questions to people, and I found him and his family. They were all right, okay? They didn't get hurt or anything. They managed to get out in time, sort of thing, but they lost everything. Everything. It's just like walking out this door to this house right now and never coming back again. So, and they were in it was cold, damn, terrible, terrible, terrible conditions, sort of thing. So, at that time, I come up with a plan, because it was a refugee camp, of every Saturday, I would take two trucks up to the mountain. All week long, I would fill those trucks with food. Non-perishable items. Saturday morning, I'd go to the kitchen and get the perishable items. We'd load up the truck. Sometimes it was one truck, sometimes it was two, all depending on how much food we had. I just scrounged the stuff all over the place. I'll probably get in trouble for this one. and then I would take this up I'd take a young guy with me. I usually take a couple or young guy with me. We would go up to the refugee camp, we would park the trucks, I'd take my guys over to the family that I knew, okay, We spend the day with them, walking around, whatever, go back to the trucks, and they would be empty. I don't know where they went, and I don't care. Okay? In the back of the truck was 2 jerry cans of wine. That was their thank you sort of thing. I'd take that wine back, and we'd give it to the various messes, and we used up that way. So, and it was good, very good for them. They really appreciated it, the getting the extra food and stuff like that. So, that's a big story. And I actually have pictures of the guy in one of these books. I can't remember which one it is now. I think it's the other one. Of him and his family, like where they were. These are very old books, by the way. Yeah, that was my room. That was my space and one of the tours.
So it was a very small space.
Oh,
that you
yeah,
lived
very
in?
Small space. But every guy wanted to have his own little spot, sort of thing, you know? So. I don't think you want to see the one of me in my underwear, but anyway. Yeah, this is where Mount. Remember I said they were throwing the drums off the hills down.
And was that was the Turks that were throwing?
Yeah, that was the Turks. They were in St. Hilarion's castle. Okay, which is what one place we went to tour sort of thing, but you could see how high it was, hey.
Mm-hmm.
The castle was basically there, and they would drop them off these hills. Oh, there's a picture of his family. His son eventually went into the military. So, but they're very. His name was Costa. He was very, very, very nice people. But they have a totally different system when they have guests at their house. The woman never stops. She constantly brings food of some kind. Drinks, food, desserts, whatever. She doesn't stop. Every time she comes in the room, whatever's in your glass is a toast to her for doing this type of stuff. Like I went to weddings when I was with this family and everything. And they were just amazing. Just amazing how the women do everything. But every time they come into the room, every guy stands up, brings his glass, and drinks what's in his car. To toast the woman for doing all of this kind of stuff. So, I don't know if you want to see any of those pictures, but anyway.
So did you keep in touch with that family after you were done your tours?
Eventually it died off. Mm-hmm. It died off. So I have no idea where they are. I don't know if he's alive now, sort of thing. The last I got, his daughter was going, she was going into college. His younger daughter was going into college, and his son had joined the military. I'm not sure about the Greeks if they have a program where they have to go in or not for so many years. I'm not sure, but I know he joined. I joined the military. So.
So in your last two tours, did you have to deal with more of a refugee problem then, like you were saying before, bringing food to them?
No, that was something I did on my own, or at the platoon, the pioneer platoon that I was with. And then of course the transport platoon that I was with, we did it ourselves. We come up with the plan, everybody gathered stuff, and we put it all together. It was just like a food bank thing, eh? Mm-hmm. And then we take it up and drop it off. Didn't care where it went. It was just, you know, along with, we knew it was being distributed throughout the refugee camp, and it was huge. It was all up in these mountains. Like I said, it was always cold up there. Always cold up there, you know, always fog and rain and stuff like that. So, and from our camp to there was about 30 miles.
To where?
To the mountain. Mm-hmm. To get up the mountain, about 30, 35 miles to get up there through winding roads and everything. So.
With your tours, were you specifically sent to Cyprus or did you request to go?
Sent? Yeah. Every 2 or 3 years, it would be our turn, the PCLI in Victoria. And because I was in Victoria for so long and not posted like to Winnipeg or whatever, you know, every time I come up, I went. Okay. The only one I didn't go on was the one in 85. And I had already had four tours, and they said, that's enough. You're staying back here. Because you always have the group that goes to Cyprus, and then you always have what's called a support company that's left behind. So I ran that company. Me and a couple of officers ran that company, which is only about 65, 70 people that were left behind, and we just kept the base going. Basically, that's all we did, work my barracks.
So how would you evaluate your peacekeeping mission? How did you, with the different duties you did, were they successful?
I think what I did was fine, yeah. I was given the tools to work with. I was given the information that I needed through my superiors, and we ran it fine. We knew that at some point during our tour there would be one major incident. Now, I wasn't involved in all of them because of the positions that I was in, but we knew why that they had that incident, because they wanted to keep us there, because we were, a lot of money went into that island from all of the organizations that went there. You know, the Americans even had a little base there, and you know, and all these other countries all went there, sort of thing. So there's a lot of money went into the economy. Like, we bought everything local. Nothing was brought in, like, you know, like it is in Afghanistan. Things where everything is brought in. You know, we bought it all local. So, and now it doesn't exist anymore.
So do you have anything else you would like to add about your experiences in Cyprus?
No, not really. I think we've covered everything. I don't know. I just want to make sure that you get what you want. Yep.
So we can end with, what was your ending rank? I know you started out as a private.
Yeah, in all of my mail, or just a Cyprus?
In Cyprus.
The Cyprus, the last rank I achieved was a sergeant.
Sergeant?
Yeah, that was the last rank.
So when did you retire from the Army?
I retired from the regular force in 89. Yeah, 89. And from there, I went right into the reserve and worked full-time for them for another 19 years. So I have a total of 42 when I'm done.
And so with that, did you receive any awards or medals?
Yeah, I have a Cyprus medal, and I have a UN peacekeeping medal. Would you like to see them?
I can see them after you.
Okay, come on. Yes, I have a Cyprus medal, and honored as a little number four, saying that I've served four times. We don't like the Americans. We don't give out a medal for every time you go. We give out one, and then we add stuff to it.
All right. So I guess that finishes it. I think I got everything. Okay. So this concludes the Military Oral History Program interview with Ron Kevin on March 23rd, 2013. So thank you. We'll just sign this. It's an interview release form, so I just want to make sure that... So you want to print your name, and then... sign here.
Yeah. What am I signing, Margaret?
if you could give him a copy of this.
Yep. Would you like a copy of the interview, or would you like a copy of the paper, or do you want another copy of the form?
No, the interview.
Yep.
Because I think it'd be helpful with it for his grandkids.
Of course.
Yeah. She's been remembering things in stories, you know. So what do you think?
You put your name in there?
Yeah, I'll put it all okay. In there for you.
So what do you think of that, Ron?
What's that?
Getting a copy of your interview
for the grandkids, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the same as that, you know, that one on the Army News?
Mm-hmm.
The last interview I did when I was in Yakima?
Yeah.
That is, like, for the grandkids.
Oh, it's you got a copy of it somewhere?
Yeah, it's online. You just punch in Army News and then my name.
But will it be there forever?
I don't know if you've done that or not. But okay, I just got a sign, right?
All right, yeah, right there. So we'll make sure that's all signed, and then that concludes that. So thank you again.